comparison is the thief of joy. Don't compare yourself to anyone else. And I think I found myself doing that throughout growing up. And I realized that everyone is on their own path.
Hey, Bomb Squad, you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, the show that's all about women and food. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, coming to you from Newsstand Studios here at Rockefeller Center in the heart of New York City. Today's guest is Sama Dada. She's the host of Hashtag Cooking for the Today Show and author of a brand new cookbook, Dada Eats, Love to Cook It, 100 Plant-Based Recipes for Everyone at Your Table. It's a vibrant book from a vibrant human, and I'm excited to share our conversation. Today's show is sponsored by Bouvet Ladubay Sparkling Wine and Homemade, the podcast from the publishers of All Recipes. Some housekeeping. If you haven't picked up our Julia Child issue, head on over to cherrybomb.com to snag a copy. We just reprinted the issue as it sold out in a flash. Everybody loves Julia Child. The issue is filled with essays, recipes, illustrations, and great archival photos of Julia. I love the issue. The team put so much love into it, and I think you'll love it too. Let's hear a word about Bouvet Ladubay, and then we'll check in with Sama. When people ask me to name my favorite drink, I always say, bubbles, please. And I am particularly fond of sparkling wine. So I'm excited to introduce you to Bouvet Ladubay, the family-run winery in the Loire Valley that has been producing Méthode Traditionnelle, pardon my French, sparkling wine since 1851. Which Bouvet to try today? How about Bouvet Ladubay Trésor Blanc? This lovely sparkler features Chenin Blanc and Chardonnay and is aged in oak barrels. Enjoy aromas of brioche and citrus, that sounds wonderful, with a creamy texture and well-balanced tannins. Or go pink with Bouvet Ladubay Brut Rosé Excellence. Bright salmon pink in color, this rosé features hints of fresh raspberry, red currant, and peach, plus black currant and quince, and some earthy, herbaceous notes. Both add the perfect pop to any summertime meal, as they pair beautifully with food. Add a little sparkle to your summer with Bouvet Ladubay Sparkling Wine. Look for Bouvet Ladubay in your favorite wine shop or on wine.com. Visit BouvetLadubay.com for more. Enjoy today's interview. Sama Dada, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm so happy to be here.
We are so happy to have you on the show today. And this is really a special treat because, as you know, we have started recording as part of Newsstand Studios here at Rockefeller Center in New York City, like I said at the beginning of the show. And you have a major connection to Rock Center.
Yes.
Let's do this in two parts. So you work for the Today Show right now. What do you do for the Today Show?
Yes. So for the Today Show right now, I am a food contributor for them. And I also host a digital series, which is now streaming on Peacock called Hashtag Cooking for them, which is really cool and exciting. And I actually started off there as a production assistant. So it's kind of been a very cool full circle moment for me.
That is amazing. Where do you record the show?
So we actually record at this new studio in Long Island City that they just built for this sort of cool food content. So I was the first kind of person to be like live from that studio or shooting something in there, which is very surreal and really it's beautiful. So I'm really excited about it.
And I should tell our listeners, sadly, you are not here with us today, even though we are, you know, in your what's kind of your second home. You are in LA right now, correct?
Yes. Yes, I am.
What are you doing out there?
So I actually came here to be with my family at the beginning of the pandemic. I stuck it out in New York for a few months. And then my parents and my family were like, what are you doing in that box alone? So I decided to come here and come home and spend some time with them. But I've been going back and forth with work a bit.
Got it. Because you are a California girl. We will talk about that.
I am.
We've got so much to talk to you about, Sama.
So much to talk about.
All right. But let's finish up on Rock Center. So you, like I said, you have a very special connection to Rock Center. You were an NBC page, which is a very big deal. People might not realize that. What does it mean to be an NBC page?
Yes. So an NBC page is a really amazing, cool program in TV. And what it is, it's sort of like a rotational program for young people who are interested in working in television. So they have you start off by giving the NBC studio tour, where you basically take large tourist groups around to different studios in 30 Rock, you know, whether that's to see to SNL studio, to see Jimmy Fallon studio, and kind of giving a history of NBC and the history of TV as it started there. And then they kind of take you through different aspects of TV, whether that's in a business, production, or a marketing standpoint of what it's like to work in TV sort of holistically. So it really gives you a sense of what it's like in any capacity working in television. So it's definitely a dream for people who want to be involved in TV in some way.
Now, it didn't scare you away from wanting to be in TV. I find that sometimes internships are good for showing you what you don't want to do as much as what you do want to do. But in this case, you were hooked.
Yeah, I was totally hooked. And you're right, because sometimes you're like, well, now I know too much. And that in some ways is true, because I can never watch the Today Show and not see the people in the control room, not see what's going on behind the scenes, and know how much work it takes to put, you know, that show together. But I love the energy. I think I've always really thrived in high pressure situations. And I definitely feed off the adrenaline of television for sure.
You say in the intro to Dada Eats that being a page was the first time you experienced a sense of belonging. Why was that?
Yeah, you know, I think growing up, I grew up in Southern California. My parents immigrated here from India. So I always kind of felt like, you know, I had Indian food on the table at home, but going to school, I saw my friends with like Lunchables and Pop-Tarts. And I never really felt like I quite fit in because I wasn't really Indian enough to jive with my Indian counterparts over in India who had grown up there and sort of knew the language better than me and had that culture really built in from the start, but also not American enough because I have more of a culture at home that I take with me everywhere. So, you know, I think I always felt a bit off balance growing up, and being in the Page program was kind of around the same time that I first found cooking. And that in itself gave me a sense of belonging because I finally felt like I was good at something, that I had this almost like I could please a bunch of different people and their palates in it. And it was a really exciting thing. And then also I think paired with the fact that the Page program really brings people together who are all interested in the same thing and interested in television. And that cohort and that family feel was just really unparalleled for me.
Now, you did get a bit of a lucky break while you were working there. And I don't even want to call it a lucky break because in some respects, people make their own luck. And I think you definitely did in this case because of your love of food and all the cooking you were doing for everyone. But tell us about the lucky break you got with the Today Show and what that led to.
Yes. So I was working as a production assistant at the Today Show at the time. And, you know, I'd wake up at 3 a.m. I'd be at work in the control room at 4.
I'm I can't even imagine getting up. I go to bed at 3 a.m. some nights.
So literally the crack of dawn.
Did you watch that Jennifer Aniston TV, the morning show, when they all had to get up every morning? I was like, oh, God.
Yes, it was triggering for sure. For sure. I don't think anyone can really thrive on that calendar, on that schedule. You really have to learn how to live with it. But yeah, I was, you know, waking up at 3 a.m, I'd be at work at 4. My job was really to build the show's rundown, time it out, run scripts to the anchor. So it was a very busy, high stress job. But at the same time, while I was working there, you know, I'd work from like 4 to 2 p.m. I'd come home and I'd cook and I'd post pictures of my food on my blog, Dada Eats at the time, and still today. And just because it was a hobby, because I loved it. And at that point I had sort of built up a bit of a following, you know, being in New York cooking, it was a really, you know, nice community to have. And some of the producers took notice of the blog and asked if I wanted to be on the show as a guest. And I was definitely freaking out on the inside. I kept it pretty cucumber, like on the surface. Because I had always wanted to work in television. I was always interested in food TV, but I never thought that opportunity would come to me in that way so organically. And I just felt like major imposter syndrome and also just really, really lucky for it. And from there, from my first segment, I started doing a bunch more and then got this show and was able to go out on my own and do what I'm doing now.
When did you first fall in love with cooking?
You know, I think I've always had a love for food and a love for cooking from watching my mom cook Indian food every single day growing up. I was always the one helping her in the kitchen, and I think that really started it. I think I'm also a much more adventurous eater than anyone in my family. I was always, you know, down to go try the newest restaurant. And I became like the human Yelp of my family and my friends. And I was just, you know, a walking, talking restaurant recommendation service. But I think when I got into cooking really in the style of cooking that I, you know, really consume myself with now was really in New York, because there is just such an insane culture of food, and it's an event. Like going out to eat is an event. Cooking dinner for your friends is a party. You know, I think that love for food, that just passion for food and the event of eating was something that really was inspiring to me. So, you know, that's when I really started cooking a lot and cooking for friends and bringing brownies into the Today Show, bringing, you know, cookies for my page friends.
There you go, everybody. Now you know the secret to success, bringing brownies to work. I'm sure that has helped more than a few people. Or
that was the best though, because I would always find a willing taste tester at like 4:30 a.m. Nowhere else will you find that than the Today Show.
Oh my God. How much coffee did you drink back
so
then?
Much, Carrie. It was honestly obscene.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot.
Too much. So you fell in love with food around that time. You also had something in the book about how you had this kind of wellness awakening that you experienced in college. You started working out, reading labels. I'm curious how that came to be.
Yeah. So I went to school at Berkeley, and I think the food scene over there, both in Berkeley and San Francisco, is super robust and diverse. And I think that was a really interesting thing for me to witness as I was studying, because you know, there's this really like kind of crunchy Berkeley Student Food Collective grocery store near campus that had like the latest alternative, like crackers that were made with like chickpeas and like different sort of hummus varieties, all these things that were really healthy and interesting. And I kind of started paying more attention to what was going into my body. I started reading menus a bit closer. I started looking at labels a bit more, not to like fit in with that like diet culture kind of thing, but more just because I was curious about what I was putting into my body, and paired with, you know, doing more yoga and just kind of taking care of my body and seeing what made me feel good was sort of what happened at Berkeley. And that wellness awakening, like you said, was a really formative thing for me. And especially it's informed the way I cook now, I think.
You'll appreciate this, but we had Alice Waters on the show last week.
Oh my God, amazing.
So I love that we had Alice last week and you this week. I feel like it's two sides of the Berkeley
it's so
coin.
So cool. I begged my parents to take me to Chez Panisse for my birthday one year. I was like, we have to go. Like, and I know only my parents can take me here. And so that's, and I met her there actually. She would probably never remember, but that was like iconic for me for sure.
You should send her a copy of the book and, you know, tell her. I know she cares deeply about what college students eat and that they are interested in food and the food systems. But watching your videos, the one thing Alice won't like is how much you love your food processor. She did talk a lot about her mortar and her pestle and how much she loves those tools.
But I love my blender. I love it. I won't tell her, though. Thank you for the tip.
Okay, so we also need to talk about the influence of your mother, because you do talk about your mom in the book, and I know your mom's been in some of your videos. You describe your mom as a very intuitive home cook. Can you describe what she's like in the kitchen?
Yes. I've never seen her use a measuring cup in her life. I've never seen her measure anything. And I think that was so interesting for me to grow up with and as somebody who I admired and looked up to, especially in the way that they cook, because you rely just on your intuition. And there's this term in Hindi called andaz, which is like your own style, your own way of cooking. And every time I would ask her, like, how do you make this? How do you make it the same? She's like, it really never turns out the same every time I make it. It's always just a little different because I'm relying on my own andaz. And I think that was really cool for me to see, because of course, as somebody who works in food, I need to write recipes. I need to write exact amounts of everything. But I also make it a point to emphasize that, you know, season this to taste, make it your own. I like to create modifications or any sort of way to make my cooking a bit more inclusive for people so that they can make it their own and to their own taste. And that for sure was inspired by my mom.
Tell us some of your mom's signature dishes.
Yes. I mean, chana masala all the time on the table growing up, biryani on special occasions, the best. She makes a really good bindi. And dal all the time, just dal on the table and basmati, right? Like that was just, you know, the bread and butter for sure.
And lucky for us, some of these recipes are in the cookbook.
Yes, exactly.
And with measurements.
With measurements. I'm not leaving anyone hanging. If my mom tried to write a cookbook, it would be like...
I would love that. Let's talk about this cookbook, Dada Eats. How did your deal come about?
Yeah, I mean, wow. It's been like a, as you know, like writing cookbook, just a long process. And I really never thought I would see the day for it to come out. So it's been really exciting, but...
You're so young and you say that.
I feel like maybe this process has aged me. No, it's been amazing.
Every cookbook writer says that. Yeah.
Yeah. But my deal came about because, so I was, like I said, when I was on the Today Show, I was working as a production assistant, but I was also at the same time, you know, having some days off to be on the show to do cooking segments or to film my show at the time as well, the first season. And I kind of got to a point where I felt like, okay, I think that I can take this leap and I think that I can work on my food passion full time and still contribute to the Today Show in the food capacity without the hours of being a production assistant. And that took a lot of faith both in myself, but also with my all of my colleagues really encouraging me that I could do it and that, you know, I would always have a home there. And once I did that, it was very weird. It was all strange universe timing where around the time that I was considering leaving the Today Show full time, my current book agent reached out to me and said, I think there's a book here. And then I started writing a proposal, but then my now editor DM'd me and said, have you thought about writing a book? And I was like, that's so weird that you say that, because yes. And we ended up selling the book exclusively to Penguin Random House, to Harmony and Rodale. And my editor who DM'd me was my editor for this book. And it all, and then I just started writing the book. So I felt very lucky, and it was just very weird how the timing kind of worked out where I just didn't even really write the proposal. I kind of just started writing the book right away.
Sama, I'm taking notes. Number one is bake brownies. Number two, read and reply to your DMs.
Yes.
We've got the Dada rules, right?
The Dada rules. I love that. Yes.
Plus a lot of hard work. I'm joking. I don't want to take away from the obvious hard work that you have done.
Thank you.
Okay, so you got to bypass the proposal process a little bit, but there's still an incredible amount of work that goes into putting together a cookbook.
Yes.
What did you talk about with the publisher? Did you know what this book would be immediately?
You know, I knew that I wanted it to be like Dada Eats 2.0. I wanted it to be like everything people are used to on my Instagram, like the gooey brownies, the really like indulgent but still better for you cookies. But I really knew from the beginning, Carrie, that I wanted, like, if I was writing a book, I wanted to write in it. And I knew I wanted to add essays into it. I knew I wanted to add personal touches into it. And I wanted it to be a reflection of my personality, but also more of a look into how I was raised, a bit more of my culture. And that included those Indian recipes that I often felt like I was omitting from my page or my social media, because, you know, I think I was catering it to more of a Western audience that I knew wanted to see those cookies and those brownies and all of those things. And in some ways, I feel like that sacrificed parts of myself. And I knew I wanted the book to be a holistic Sama, you know, I wanted it to be all of me. And that was something that I had expressed pretty early on in the process. And I feel good about it. I feel like I got my goal kind of accomplished for sure.
I have to say, you did such a beautiful job with the book. I kind
Thank
of curled
you.
Up with it last night to, you know, honestly, just flip through it to get ready for this. And I started reading your intro. And I got so pulled in, Sama, by the emotion that you put into this. And you know, I read, you know, gosh.
I know.
A lot of cookbooks.
That's why I'm so honored.
I just felt like I came away with this really beautiful picture of you and your family and what has influenced you over the years. But just, you put so much love into this. And it comes across in every sentence and in all the recipes. You even called the recipes little pieces of your heart and soul. And that made me stop and just gasp. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so much more than a cookbook to Sama.
Thank you.
So why did all this mean so much to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's just like the highest compliment. Thank you. You know, I always wanted to write. I grew up like as a 7-year-old, I thought I would be like a young mystery novelist, which clearly didn't pan out, but this is better, I think. I honestly never thought that I would be in this position. I really didn't. From kind of the way that I grew up and the feelings of being a little bit not like I belonged neither here nor there. And it just has been, I feel privileged, honestly. I feel privileged to have the opportunity to write a book, to share parts of myself with people, to share recipes that a lot of folks have told me because of the way that they are inclusive and they are using these alternative ingredients have allowed, you know, people who are on strict diets or are sick or, you know, different groups of people who have benefited from the recipes. Even if I help one person, I had one woman reach out to me and said that her dad has cancer. And it was my brownie was the first one he was able to enjoy in years. Like things like that. It's like, it's a privilege to be able to do this. And I never thought I would get that privilege. I think also not really seeing a lot of women who look like me on screen or, you know, represented in media, I felt like it was just a really exciting thing for me to be that person for a lot of maybe young Indian girls who also didn't see themselves represented. And I hope that they can now.
That's wonderful. It also feels like a very modern cookbook. I'm skipping ahead a little bit here on some of the things I want to talk about, but you know, you talk about how you are obsessed with alternative ingredients. And I do feel like if we were to put this book in a time capsule with like Julia Child's cookbook and a few others, like this cookbook is very 2021 in terms of the ingredients. Mm-hmm. So it is very modern, but like I said, you've also got your family recipes in there. Let's pick a few recipes to talk about.
Sure.
Pick one that is a great starter or introduction to what Dada cuisine is all about.
I would probably say my chocolate chip cookie pie, because for anyone who is skeptical,
I want that right now.
I know. I'm going to send you one. And actually, next time I come in to see you, I'm going to bring that for you.
Okay. You can bring it to me and Joe, our engineer. We're ready and waiting.
It's going to be ready for you guys as well. Fresh out of the oven. I would say my chocolate chip cookie pie. And the reason I say that is because I feel like it's a really good like gateway recipe for me because it uses almond flour, it uses coconut sugar, things that, you know, people maybe when they're thinking of a chocolate chip cookie, they don't necessarily think of.
Right. This is not a book filled with white flour and white sugar recipes at all.
No. But I want people to feel like even if that is their thing, they love white sugar, they love just a traditional brownie or a traditional cookie, I want them to feel like they can eat it and be like, whoa, this is good. This isn't good for being gluten-free, or this isn't good for being dairy-free. This is just straight up good. So that's kind of what I try to do in all my recipes. And I think the chocolate chip cookie pie is one of the recipes that surprised the most people, especially like my mom. She is a convert to my cooking, but she was not that way before. And that is her favorite recipe because she just doesn't understand how it's so good and dense and delicious, but it has very minimal ingredients in it. So I would definitely say that one.
Some of the recipes you might have to just have people taste the finished product before you tell them what's in it. Because I know you, I saw a few things with like cookies with chickpeas and things like that. And I was like, I have a lot of friends who I could not, if I tell them beforehand what's in it, they will make fun of it. But I think it's one of those things, have them try it and then spring it on them.
Yeah, trick all your friends. That's what this is about. I have I have an avocado brownie recipe in the book, which is really a plot twist, but you know, it is so, you would literally have no idea because the avocado, it's so rich. It's kind of like the butter replacement in a brownie. And it's really crazy how you can get creative in the kitchen for sure and trick everyone.
Joe and I will be totally happy with a tray of avocado brownies as well. Just saying.
It's coming your way. I'm making notes.
Okay, next recipe, one that is an emotional favorite of yours.
Probably my best dal ever because it's nostalgic because it reminds me of, you know, the dal that I ate growing up, but it has a bit of my own twist on it and a bit of a modern twist, like you were saying, because I add coconut milk instead of butter or cream in it. And so it's really rich and tangy. And I would always make it for myself when I was living in New York in my like tiny little studio apartment. And it just felt like home for sure.
It's your comfort food?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Tell us the ingredients, Salma.
Yeah. So we've got, of course, dal, so lentils. I add coconut milk. We've got onions, garlic, ginger, lots of different spices. So cayenne, turmeric, cumin, coriander, all of the usual suspects for me. I like to add some what I like to call sneaky spinach in there because you really don't know that it's in there, but you just let it wilt and then you've got some greens. And I find that it's really great if you're just eating it with basmati rice, you could eat it with naan or even quinoa or just have it as a soup. And it's really versatile and comforting for sure.
I saw that video of you and your mother shopping for lentils. Does she approve of this recipe?
She actually does. Yes. Thank God. Whew. I'm safe.
Okay. And then last, tell me a recipe that you make time and time again and never get tired of.
You know what? This is going to be basic, Carrie, but probably my OG hummus, because I make it all the time. I love hummus. I think it is there for me when people aren't. You know, it's one of those things where there's also a lot of hummus noise out there, right? Like there's so many varieties you can get in the store. You know, everyone is making their own version.
It's peak hummus, right?
Yeah, exactly. And this is one I just keep coming back to, because not only is it really great if you're entertaining, it's like a crowd pleaser for sure, but it's also nice to have on hand as like a snack with some crudité or crackers.
Do you make it from dried chickpeas or do you use canned chickpeas?
I use canned, which I know is controversial, but I always find that I can get a really... So like I said, I like to make all my recipes super accessible. I don't want somebody to look at it and be like, oh no, I have to soak these chickpeas overnight. And then, which is of course a perfectly great way to do it and probably the right way to do it. But I think that by making my recipes inclusive and accessible, I want people to look at the can of chickpeas in their pantry and think, okay, great, I can make hummus from this and just blitz it up in my blender. So yeah, I use canned. And I love that for me.
Do you know what I do that's crazy? I use canned, but I peel the skin off each chickpea.
You are honestly a champion.
I am, because it is the best hummus in the world. And it doesn't take that long, and it's very meditative. So if you really want an amazingly smooth hummus, you just pop the skin off. It's really fun.
It's easy.
You could do that, and then you can make Sama's recipe.
Great.
I'm going to try that soon.
We'll do like a little duo. Yeah, I love that.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word about homemade. It's been said that a recipe is a story that ends with a good meal. Homemade, the podcast from the publishers of All Recipes, celebrates this notion, serving up beloved dishes and the stories behind them. Join Marty Duncan, who was a finalist on the show Next Food Network Star, as she talks with celebrated cooks, including Guy Fieri, Patti LaBelle, and our beloved Barefoot Contessa, Ina Garten, about the memories and traditions behind their favorite foods. Listen to Homemade on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorite shows. The latest guest on Homemade is a Bomb Squad favorite. It's chef, TV personality, and cookbook author, Sarah Moulton. Some of you might have caught Sarah during our Julia Jubilee legacy panel because she used to be Julia's assistant. Can you imagine? That must have been some job. And she has some incredible Julia memories. Sarah joins host Marty to share stories of working with Julia, tips on leftovers and meal prep. I need those tips. And how home cooks have become more creative and inspiring since the advent of food TV. Don't miss Sarah and Marty in conversation. Give a listen to Homemade. Let's talk about your pantry section. You have a fun pantry section. Oh my gosh, so many good. I mean, I felt like I was reading about my own pantry. Nut butters, coconut sugar, all your fabulous spices. Let's take the ones I just mentioned. Nut butters. What do you love? Why do you love them?
Oh my gosh, I love nut butters so much. Like to snack on, to bake with. I usually like them kind of, you know, I'll use them as a base for certain cookies or even a banana bread, because I find that it adds not only that richness and that fat that you need for a baked good, but also a little nuttiness. And I love that, especially when I'm baking, but it's also something that I am obsessed with snacking on. I add it. So this is my favorite snack of all time. And if you're ever anywhere close to my social media, I shout this from like the rooftops. I have some warm dates that I'll stuff with almond butter and sprinkle with some flaky sea salt. And it is just beyond. So that's something, another use of it that I absolutely love.
I love that. We just had that yesterday. Nancy, our art director, was at my office and we had some dates from Rancho Melaleuco, which I love. Have you had their dates?
Yes, they're amazing. Oh. They're based in California, down here somewhere. Yeah,
they are really good. Women owned. We love it. So we had that yesterday. And I just bought some cashew butter. I did have to take out a loan to afford the cashew butter. That is expensive stuff.
Cashew butter is really expensive. It is. Nut butters in general are very expensive. I find that the only way that I can justify it is that I'm using it on everything. So.
True. As long as you use it and don't waste it, you can justify it. Okay. So did I see pecan butter also in your cookbook?
So I do like pecan butter for a specific recipe, actually. I like making these little mini pecan pies, and they're super cute. Everything in mini form is always cuter. We all know this information. But it's like a little cookie crust, and then I like using the pecan butter in the actual filling. But honestly, almond is usually my MVP.
Okay.
My MVP in the nut butter category for sure.
And coconut sugar sounds like your MVP in the sugar category.
Yes. I love coconut sugar.
What is it about coconut sugar? And for those who haven't really cooked or baked with coconut sugar, can you tell us the difference between that and your traditional white sugar?
Coconut sugar is an unrefined sweetener, so it is a little bit better for you because it's a little lower glycemic, and that really, to me, doesn't matter. Like, I think that's great for people who need to watch out for that kind of stuff, but to me, I find that it gives this really nice, rich, warm taste to anything you add it in, and it's a bit less processed, so I find that it not only adds that really delicious, like, warm, rich body of the whatever you're adding it to, but it's a little bit better for you too, which is kind of nice. I like to look out for things that are a little less processed, so I feel better about what I'm putting into my body.
Salma, which spice is your MVP?
Oh my gosh, Carrie, this is a tough question because I use three of them, at least in my Indian cooking, in tandem. So like my cayenne, my cumin, my turmeric are like my three MVPs that I use for any of my Indian cooking. But a spice blend that have been obsessed with forever. Actually, my grandma used to make it. It's chaat masala. So it's a blend of a lot of different spices. It's got like the cumin and the coriander and dry mango powder and red chilies. And it's tangy and spicy. And I put that also on everything.
Do you have a brand that you like in case people want to buy it?
I actually just did a collaboration with La Boite in New York, and we made one because I couldn't find one that I was obsessed with. So we kind of made it like a little bit inspired by my grandma's recipe, and I kind of made it my own. And it was like the most exciting thing because now I kind of have my own / my grandma's.
I did not know that. I did. And for those of you wondering, I did not ask that question. That was not a softball question because I knew that she had that collab. I did not know that. Can people buy that?
Yeah, you can buy it. You can buy it.
Where, how?
You can buy it on La Boite's website. It's B-O-I-T-E.
Okay.
And that's
great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to order that when we wrap up. Okay. You need to talk to me about gluten-free pasta.
I'm here for it.
You know what? I don't even know that I've ever had gluten-free pasta, but you seem to be a big fan. And I'm not making, you know what? I should start that over because that sounds like I'm making fun of gluten-free pasta. I'm not making fun of gluten-free pasta. I just have zero experience with gluten-free pasta, and you seem to be an enthusiast. And I wanted to ask you about it because I do have some friends who are gluten-free. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you recommend and then give us some cooking tips.
Sure. So the biggest thing with gluten-free pasta is that you need to be like a helicopter parent with the pasta. You gotta be watching it because in just a second, it'll turn super gummy. And that's why it's not really that cute sometimes. But what I like to do, I usually like a lot of the bean-based pastas because I think they're fun and I just think they're cute. But I like bonza. I like their chickpea pasta. And with that too, I do cook it like pretty al dente so that it doesn't get gummy. And then also there's some really great brown rice and quinoa varieties out there. There's one at Trader Joe's, which I know, Carrie, you haven't been to Trader Joe's, but I will take you there.
I have not.
And I will get you this brown rice and quinoa fusilli pasta, which is actually really delicious. But again, biggest tip with that is not to overcook it because it will get gummy. And I think that's what turns people off of gluten-free pasta because, and this all to say, you know, the OG pasta, like, great. We love pasta. This is just kind of nice to have an alternative if you want to switch it up, or if, you know, like you said, you have friends who are intolerant to gluten or need a good alternative.
Yes, Salma just revealed one of my darkest, deepest secrets. I am a Trader Joe's virgin, and Salma and I might be working on that later in the summer, right, Salma? I walked in a Trader Joe's once, and I walked out because I was so overwhelmed and the line was so long, but I'm willing to give it a second chance later this year.
You might be the only person, Carrie. We should do some like research on this. I'm here for it.
I might be the only person. You'd probably have a hard time finding someone your age. Maybe my age. There are a few virgins left, but we'll find out. Okay, back to the gluten-free pasta and the helicopter parenting of the pasta, which I love. Do you salt the water? Do you do everything else basically the same?
Everything else basically the same. Salt the pasta water, and just add it in, and just really check the, just keep checking it until you it's pretty al dente and you want it to be a bit firm. And then, you know, just I like to cook it with my sauce for a second before I serve it, whatever I'm eating it with or using it for. And yeah, that would be my main tip for sure.
And do you save the pasta water? I know we all remember saving the pasta water was a big thing that a certain test kitchen was pushing on all of us. And that's always been a big chef trick for a long time. And it's a great trick when you're making traditional pasta, but does the same thing happen or not really?
You can save it. I do for some recipes where I feel like I need it to be a little bit saucier and have it adhere a bit more to the actual pasta. But usually I make really creamy sauces. Like I have a masala mac and cheese in the book, for example, which is super, super creamy. And I love a saucy pasta. So for things like that, I don't really care that much to save the pasta water. But if I'm making something that maybe has like kale or mushrooms or something in it and it needs a little bit of help to kind of adhere and get that creaminess going, then I'll save a little bit.
I love it. I'm going to give it a chance.
Hey.
Let's talk about New York City restaurants.
Okay.
Because like you said earlier, you were the sort of like human Yelp for all your friends and family members. Do you still love restaurants and keep restaurant lists?
Yes, I am obsessed. I have restaurant lists. I get still asked by all of my friends and even people who I don't know actually online who are like, where should I go to eat in New York? And I'm like, well, what are your dietary restrictions? Who are you going with? Are you on a date? Are you with your family? So I really do my research for sure.
Oh my gosh, you're like a one-woman infatuation.
Here I am. Yeah, I really am. I should start my own thing, but really it's just through my DMs.
So no restrictions. I mean, we love a restaurant that is owned by women, you know, female founded, owned, operated, female chefs, female pastry chefs.
Of course.
Where would you tell people to eat in New York City this summer?
Oh my gosh, there are so many places. I recently actually just went to a new restaurant that just opened in New York called Planta Queen. Have you heard of it, Carrie? It's based in Miami, actually. And they're a completely vegan restaurant, but they do sort of the most insane, like sushi rolls, and they have like dandan noodles and like really spicy, flavorful food that you really don't even understand how it could be vegan. That is a really delicious restaurant that I just tried. And you know where I want to go that I've never been, and now that they have a vegan menu, I'm intrigued, is 11 Madison Park. They have a full vegan menu, and I saw this information and I was taken aback, and I would love to try that at some point.
That was big news. They went entirely plant-based.
Big news.
One of the top restaurants on the planet. So that was a major moment. Tell me the name of the first one again.
Planta Queen.
Planta Queen. So P-L-A-N-T-A.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Have you been yet?
Yes, I just went actually the day my book came out. I like celebrated. And it's amazing. They do this like amazing watermelon ahi tuna sushi, like all of these crazy things that are just really flavorful. And that's what I like about really inventive plant-based cuisine, is where they actually take, you know, whether it's like a fruit or a vegetable, and completely change the flavor profile. So you just have no idea what's going on. And that's what I love. I really resonate with that too. Like as somebody who puts avocado in brownies, I'm like, I love that energy for me. I like that.
Oh my gosh.
For sure.
Are you a dirt candy fan?
Okay. This is crazy. I've never been.
Oh my God. We got to go.
Can we go when I'm in town?
It's a lot more affordable than 11 Madison Park, so I'll treat. So
let's go. That sounds amazing.
Absolutely. I would love to. And my second reco for you, but maybe you've been, Superiority Burger.
I've also never been there.
No.
So I know. But you know what's crazy is because I wanted to go, and I think—
Well, you do get up at 3 a.m, so—
That's what people should know too. I didn't have a life for like 3 years. So like really was just cooking my own food, like didn't get out much for sure. Cause you know, with that schedule, I had to be asleep at 8. So when all my friends were like out, you know, having dinner, I was like, hey guys, like time for me to sleep, wake up at 3. So I think I still have a lot of catching up to do with the New York restaurant scene, but I welcome it. Really?
Okay. When you're back, we're going to go to Amanda Cohen. She's been on the show a lot. She has dirt candy. It's over on
She's
the Lower
awesome.
East Side. And then this is owned by a guy, but we love him. And he's been on the show. Brooks Headley. He used to be a big award-winning pastry chef. He was at Del Posto, and I think he won James Beard Awards. And he walked away from it all to open this little hole-in-the-wall plant-based spot called Superiority Burger, and it's fantastic. Both places are fantastic and run by wonderful people. So if you're listening and you're in New York or coming to New York, go support them, and maybe you'll bump into me and Sama.
Yes. We have a food tour crawl on our hands. Yeah, we do. We really do.
Absolutely. Okay, Sama, we are going to do the speed round. What is the oldest thing? Well, I guess you're at home, so this is your mom's fridge.
Oh, yeah.
What's the oldest thing in your, or your parents, I should say, what's the oldest thing in your parents' fridge?
I love this question. Probably ketchup. And I say this because I don't really, so with like traditional ketchup, there's a lot of sneaky sugar in there. And so like my sister and I are, you know, we tell our parents like, okay, like, well, there are some better alternatives here, you guys. So that's been sitting there for some time. For sure.
You know whose ketchup I love? This is supposed to be a speed round and it winds up never being a speed round, but by Chloe. I know Chloe, who yes. we love, isn't connected with them anymore, but they had that beet ketchup that I thought was just terrific.
So good. I agree. I love that. It was so sweet and delicious, but it like felt unique. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I loved it.
I think you might have already told us the answer to this, but your most used kitchen tool.
Yes, my high-speed blender. There are a few things blender. I don't put in there. Sorry, Alice Waters.
She may or may not forgive you. Do you own a mortar and pestle?
I do. Okay. So, you know, okay. At least I have that going for me.
Bust that out every now and then. Okay, coffee or tea, and how do you take it?
Coffee, 1,000%. I was just conditioned from the Today Show to be obsessed. In the morning, I take it black. And then in the afternoon, because I usually have like a couple cups, I'll either do like an oat cappuccino or something with some oat milk in it.
What is a song that makes you smile?
There's this is so classic Sama answer, but there's this Swedish artist called Leon that I'm obsessed with. And she makes like very happy yet also depressing music. And I think that's like my my vibe. It's like upbeat, but it's like she's kind of sad still. And I like her music. It's just really, really good. She's amazing.
Spell her name for those who want to look it up.
It's Leon, but the E has a little accent on it. Leon.
Okay. Yeah. And are you a music in the kitchen person?
For sure. I feel like it is really empty without it, but I'm also, sometimes I'll be filming things that I'm doing. And in that case, I'll either have it really quiet in the background or not at all. So I can talk over my steps.
And how about footwear in the kitchen? Barefoot, or do you wear some kind of shoe
like
situation?
Socks, probably. No, no shoes.
How about when you're working, like on Today Show set?
Sneakers all the way. For my first few segments when I was in the studio, I would do heels because I was like, here I am, a professional production assistant turned not. But now sneakers, I can't. I don't remember the last time I wore heels.
Favorite cookbook?
Well, I've had my head in my own cookbook for literally 2 years now. But I also can't say that's my favorite. I would say Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat by Samin Nosrat, because I feel like she was sort of the first person that I felt articulate an experience that was so similar to mine growing up. And that really inspired a lot of my feeling confident to share my own story in my own cookbook. But I've been cooking out of my own cookbook recently, which has been the most trippy thing ever. So that's been really fun also.
There is no shame in loving your own cookbook. I still cook from the Cherry Bomb cookbook all the time.
Yes. I mean, I think I did something wrong if I didn't love it. So I'm happy that I'm at the point where I can do that.
Okay. And we are debuting two new questions for the speed round. And these are going to be the least speediest questions, but
okay.
I don't know. This struck me when I was reading your book last night. What's one good habit that you have that makes your life better in some way?
Oh, this is really good. I would say getting out for a walk. And that has truly changed my mental health, even my physical health. I think it's so simple to think about just getting out, listening to a podcast, listening to Cherry Bomb, listening to music, like whatever it is, or even calling a friend. And I think getting that fresh air and having just some peace away from whatever your work is, has been like a game changer for me. And I feel like a lot of people have, you know, at least become more outspoken of their mental health, especially in the pandemic. And I think I definitely have been feeling very anxious for like the last year. So that was something that really kept that in check for sure.
And then one great piece of advice.
Comparison is the thief of joy. Like, don't compare yourself to anyone else. And I think I found myself doing that throughout growing up. And I realized that everyone is on their own path. Like, there is enough for everybody. Everyone is doing their own thing. And the second you start to compare yourself to somebody else, you're taking away from your own experience and what you're doing and the magic and power in that. And that's really helped me get through a lot in my life for sure.
That is beautiful. Our last question, if you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be and why?
Ooh, this is going to be really cliche, but probably Bourdain, because I would have loved to spend time with him on a desert island because he was so unique and such an icon and a hero of mine. So him.
That remains our number one answer.
Yep.
All right, Sama, you are amazing. I really enjoyed talking to you. This was so wonderful. Do your friends call you Lady Dada?
You know who calls me Lady Dada, Carrie, is the executive producer at the Today Show. So whenever I would be running scripts or whatever, he would just call me Lady Dada. And that's so funny that you say that because he's the only one. I can't believe you said that. It's amazing. And this has been so fun for me. I'm so honored. Thank you for having me.
Good. Well, the honor is all mine. And I look forward to when you're back in New York so we can hang out in person.
I would love it.
So congrats on your beautiful book. And I hope this is just the first of many Radio Cherry Bomb appearances.
Thank you, Carrie. Me too. Plus, we have a lot of eating to do and catching up. So
we do. We do.
I'm going to get a tour.
Thanks, Sama.
Thank you, Carrie.
That's it for today's show. I really enjoyed that chat. Thank you so much to Sama Dada, author of the new cookbook, Dada Eats. Pick up a copy at your favorite bookstore. Thank you to Bouvet La Debe, sparkling wine, and to Homemade, the podcast from the publishers of All Recipes, for supporting today's episode. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Magazine. We record at Newsstand Studios here in Rockefeller Center in New York City. Thanks to our chief engineer, Joseph Hazen. Thanks, Joe. And thank you to Radio Cherry Bomb's assistant producer, Jenna Sadu. If you enjoyed our show, be sure to sign up for our newsletter over at cherrybomb.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.